Reading sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to The Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on The Andy Finn Show, and we're here talking a little bit about the debate from last Friday. Today is Monday, October 6, 2008, and we are between debates. The VP debate was last Thursday night. The second presidential debate is tomorrow night, Tuesday night, the 7th. So let's go back to a couple of issues from the debate. The first that I want to cover is this issue of Barack Obama. Well, it really highlights the charges and countercharges that pick nits, that thread the needle, that make too fine a point of it. Are there any more metaphors I can summon up here? And here's an example. Sarah Palin accused Barack Obama of voting to defund the troops, as though he wanted to deny our troops in the field money. And Biden, at the time that this vote was held, Biden said, "I'm not willing to do it." He buckled and voted for it. Obama held his ground and voted against it. When it came Joe Biden's turn, though, he had a legitimate defense of Obama, and this is what he said. "Look, essentially, this is a red herring. Everybody in Congress wants our troops to have the money they need. This was a debate over whether or not we were going to force a timeline on this and force George Bush to get out of Iraq." Basically, he's saying John McCain voted the exact same way. Well, not on that particular iteration of the bill. They voted different. But there was a previous version of the bill to fund the troops, and it had a timeline, and McCain voted against it. So Joe Biden made the point that, hey, you could turn around here and say John McCain voted to defund the troops. He did, only because he wasn't willing to fund them under those circumstances. It isn't that he wasn't willing to fund them. Well, the final bill that passed, Barack Obama wasn't willing to fund them under those circumstances. And it's as simple as that. And so for the McCain-Palin ticket to claim that Obama was somehow unwilling to fund troops is misleading, and that was Biden's point. What was interesting is how the media picked up on this. First of all, they said that Biden was wrong. In fact, I saw Lou Dobbs on TV claim that Joe Biden lied. He out and out lied. And that's almost a direct quote from Biden. Not so. Lou Dobbs is misinformed once again. So the media reports initially said that Biden was wrong when he said that they voted exactly the same way. He didn't mean they voted the same way on the same submission of the bill. He meant they voted the same way against funding on two different versions of the bill. He did mean that John McCain voted against that, and the media came out immediately. A few networks came out and claimed that John McCain never voted no. He didn't cast a vote on that. No, that was a different bill he didn't cast a vote on. In fact, some of the media have corrected themselves, including factcheck.org, and said, whoops, we were wrong. Joe Biden was right in the debate. John McCain did, in fact, cast a vote on this bill that had a timeline attached, and McCain voted against funding the troops. So it's a red herring, but that's the kind of stuff that you'll see in campaigns. People simplify these things greatly, and that's just the way it is. Let's see, what else do we want to cover here? I thought it was interesting that when they asked about Israel, Biden spoke first about, you know, support for Israel. And when Palin got her turn, she said something like, "I'm so glad to see we exist. We agree. And my opponent, or Joe Biden, feels strongly and loves Israel the way I do." And I'm thinking, who is this woman? She's been in the national spotlight 5 weeks. Joe Biden's been in the spotlight for 35 years. And she's kind of patting him on the back and giving him credit for taking the same position she has. I got news for you, Governor Palin. Just as you said, you've been listening to his speeches since you were in the second grade. He's had support for Israel since you were in the second grade. So if you have a position similar to his, that's nice, but let's not pretend that somehow he's mimicking your position, which is kind of how she seemed to make it sound. And let's see. Oh, yeah. Palin made the claim that Barack Obama will increase your taxes and that he supported taxing families making as little as $42,000 a year. Okay. This is not true. Factcheck.org has been all over this. And basically, this was a non-binding budget resolution that Obama voted for. And it laid down general budgetary guidelines. That's what these non-binding budget resolutions do. And that one was based on the assumption that the Bush tax cuts will expire in 2011 as they are scheduled to expire and as they have been scheduled since they were put in place. And so one of the rosy assumptions in there was that a tax break would go away that was on people making $42,000 a year. But, of course, that's not the same as voting to increase taxes. It's voting on a hypothetical spending resolution. So it was, but you know, this, and I'm not picking on Palin for that one. These talking points were given to her by her campaign. She learned them and she spoke them. That's just the way it is in debates. I will say this, and this is my bias being left of center, is that I'm of the opinion that the McCain campaign and in the vice presidential debate, Sarah Palin stretched the truth more than the Obama campaign and Joe Biden have. Now, have both sides stretched the truth some? Yes, but we haven't seen things quite like, from the Obama campaign, we have not seen things quite like, I'll just give two ads that have come out as examples. One was the lipstick on a pig ad where they claimed that Barack Obama was intentionally insulting Governor Palin and calling her a pig when he used the very old expression. In talking about John McCain, he hadn't mentioned Sarah Palin recently, in talking about John McCain's flip-flops or his change on taxes and the economy, saying that you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. The claim on the other side is that, oh no, Governor Palin mentioned lipstick and a joke about it in her speech to the Republican convention, therefore Obama's not allowed to talk about lipstick. I don't get it. But that's my left-to-center perspective. The other ad that came out that was totally unfair was this one that claimed that Barack Obama wanted to teach comprehensive sex education to kindergartners, a total misrepresentation of a bill that he didn't even sponsor and never passed, although he was in favor of it and I think voted for it once, that was going to do, A, give comprehensive sex education to schoolers, age-appropriate education, and that included, B, teaching kids as young as kindergartners about good touch and bad touch so that they recognized molestation when it happened to them. So that's the kind of thing we've seen out of the McCain campaign. There's a few on the Obama side I'm not very proud of, as well, but I don't think it's been quite as bad, and I don't think it's as bad as it's going to get, but we'll see about that. Anyway, it's worth talking about a couple more things, and that is, one is the overall impression that people have from this debate is interesting, because one of the things that we've seen is that if you're on the right, you tend to see these through a conservative's lenses, and if you're on the left, you see them through a liberal's lenses. There was a picture in the Washington Post after the debate that showed Sarah Palin talking to Joe Biden, and her little daughter was in between them. Joe Biden has his shoulder on the little daughter's, his hand on the daughter's shoulder, and he's talking to Sarah Palin, and he's gesturing, and he looks like he's pointing with his finger, okay? And so they published two letters to the editor about it and republished the picture on Saturday, the one that had appeared on Friday. And one person said, basically, could you bend any more biased towards Joe Biden? You show him there lecturing Sarah Palin, showing him clearly an authority figure, lecturing her. You know, I can't believe how liberal the Washington Post is. And someone else wrote in and said, Could you be any more biased towards Sarah Palin? You make Joe Biden look like a bully in that picture, towering over Palin, pointing at her, when in fact he was respectful and resisted going after her all during the debate, a total misrepresentation. So again, people see what they want to see. And I'll just say that Biden did what he needed to do in the debate. He went after McCain, defended Obama, and ignored the attacks from Palin, even when they were against him. The only one that really got me was where she said, when Biden says there's a clear difference here, we will get us out of Iraq over the next 16 months. It's time to go. And Palin said, well, that's the white flag of surrender. This idea that if you have a different approach to how we extract ourselves from this war, that you're surrendering. People's conservatives often refer to this as cut and run. No, it's a principled position based on the belief that we can do no more good in Iraq. I believe for several years, I believe since we went in, really, that whenever we left, there was going to be a power vacuum. And there's often bloodshed in any power vacuum. There's likely to be unrest. There's likely to be maybe not civil war, but certainly bloodshed, and maybe extensive bloodshed whenever we leave. Had we left right after we got there, if we leave now, if we'd left 2 years ago, if we leave in two more years, there's going to be bloodshed in Iraq. And you can say it's on our hands, or you can say it's the Iraqis' faults, but it's going to happen. So if you believe that, and that's a principled position to take, it's very possible, then it's not cutting and running to say it's time to go now. We've been there over 5 years. We've had mission creep. We're well beyond the mission. It's time to make a decision. The McCain position, as Biden points out, is just keep it open-ended and somehow we'll let the generals tell us when to get out. You know, Bush has hidden behind the generals for too long. Could you imagine Truman allowing MacArthur to make a decision about when we would go in or get out of Korea? It's really pretty amazing that, you know, McCain and Obama sparred over the difference between a tactic and a strategy. But in fact, Bush doesn't understand tactics and strategy. And the McCain campaign is a series of tactics. And it's hard to see their overall strategy. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But right now, Palin has, with her performance in the debate, she stopped the talk of she needs to get off the ticket. Right? There had been a couple of columnists, Fareed Zakaria, conservative columnist Kathleen Parker, both said she ought to get off the ticket. That talk has stopped, but that doesn't mean the country thinks she's ready to be president. The last thing I'll say before the break is Palin also released her tax returns, and so we know a little bit about that. Now she's worth a couple million dollars, apparently, which is a fair amount of money up in Alaska. She explained what happened during her interview with Katie Couric. She was annoyed. This is what she told Hugh Hewitt, I believe it was. And she said, in those Katie Couric interviews, I did not feel that there were a lot of things that I did feel there were a lot of things that she was missing in terms of an opportunity to ask what a VP candidate stands for. Those subjects, including Barack Obama's positions on taxes, spending in Afghanistan. Quote, so I guess I have to apologize for being a bit annoyed, but that's also an indication of being outside the Washington elite, outside the media elite also. I just wanted to talk to Americans without the filter and let them know what we stand for. You know, she used this excuse of the filter also in her, in her VP debate. That's why she liked talking without going through the filter. What she means is, I don't like having to answer questions. Well, welcome to the club. Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays at 10 p.m. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station. We are back on the Andy Finn Show. Today is Monday, October 6th, and it was on this date in 1991 that Elizabeth Taylor married Larry Fortensky at Michael Jackson's estate. Well, talk about bad judgment, Liz. It was Taylor's eighth marriage, and if you remember, this was a guy she met in rehab. So all you guys who would like to marry the most beautiful woman in the world, eventually you may get the chance. Just have to be in the right place at the right time. It was also the day that Anwar Sadat was assassinated in Cairo. If you remember, Egyptian President Anwar Sadat was gunned down, and then Hosni Mubarak became president. He's still president. Can you imagine what year this was? Think back. What year would Sadat have been assassinated? He signed the peace deal with Carter in 79. 1981, Sadat was assassinated. Also, the first male nurse came into the U.S. Army on this date in, guess what year? How long did it take before we had a male nurse in the Army? 1954 was the date. It's pretty amazing, really, if you think about it. And on this date, the Mormon Church outlawed polygamy. The Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, they preferred to be called. Guess what year that was? It was a lot earlier than 1954. 1890, but some would say not early enough. It was early enough for me. And it's the birthday of George Westinghouse, 1846. Well, let's move on now and talk about a couple of other things here. The election's coming into the home stretch here, and the claim is that what we're going to see now are a push by the McCain campaign to get off of economics now that the bailout's been approved and move on to, well, all I can say is the politics of personal destruction. They're going to go after Barack Obama's character and his fitness to be president. Now, I heard Republicans being asked about this. They may be squeamish about it, but on TV they, with a straight face, said that this is a legitimate area of inquiry. And so they're going to bring up William Ayers, and they're going to bring up all this stuff again. Reverend Wright, we may see, although McCain said it was off limits, and both he and Cindy McCain have said, and his campaign staff followed suit and said, we're going to run a respectful campaign, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's already started. Sarah Palin over the weekend was in Sedona, Arizona, and basically said that Barack Obama is not, here's a quote, this is not a man who sees America as you see it and how I see it. We see America as the greatest force for good in this world. Okay. Our opponent, though, is someone who sees America, it seems, as being so imperfect that he's palling around with terrorists who would target their own country. Well, this is a reference to William Ayers. She had previously said that, here's how she introduced the topic. She claimed that this is just an innocent thing she decided to talk about. There's a lot of interest, I guess, in what I read and what I've read lately. Well, I was reading my copy of today's New York Times, and I was interested to read about Barack's friends from Chicago. I get to bring this up not to pick a fight, but it was there in the New York Times, so we're going to talk about it. And then he goes on to talk about Ayers. Well, I read that article about William Ayers. The New York Times just did it on Saturday, I think it was. Maybe it was Friday. And it basically debunked this myth that, A, Obama and heirs are close in any way. Basically, they worked together on a couple of projects. Bill Ayers was a terrorist 40 years ago. The government, he surrendered to the government. They ended up not charging him, bringing him to trial. The buildings and the bombings they targeted were always targeting places, not people. They were not trying to kill people. He's never been accused of murder by anyone this side of G. Gordon Liddy. And he doesn't have terrorist beliefs today. He's written 15 books. He's a tenured professor at the University of Illinois, Chicago. His wife's a tenured professor at the Northwestern University Law School. And he's passionate about education. He believes that small schools work best. And so he's worked for years and years on not just writing books about this and studying education, but trying to implement these kinds of schools in Chicago, especially in poor areas. So he ended up on the same board of an organization as Obama. And so they've met and they live in roughly the same neighborhood. But he doesn't advise Obama. Obama has condemned the acts, the terrorism, and the other stuff William Ayers did when he was part of the Weather Underground. But people like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and other talk show hosts continue to bring this up as though anyone you've ever talked with somehow tars you. Okay? Obama has already said he thinks what Bill Ayers did back then was despicable. What do you want? You want him to condemn this guy in the present moment? We got to then start having John McCain condemn everyone he's come in contact with that's less than savory? Anyway, we're going to see more of this, and it's a shame, but that's the way it goes. Other things on the campaign, McCain has pulled out of Michigan. That came out the end of last week, right about the time of the debate. The Republicans believe that they might be able to carry Michigan. And everything has changed since the financial crisis has come front and center. Economics and the economy, the bread and butter issues, the price of gas, the meltdown, the bailout, all of these have switched the debate. It's not going to be foreign policy that people vote on. It's not going to be the cultural issues and abortion and gay rights and gay marriage and all this stuff. It's going to be this whole issue of, what do we do about the economy? And Democrats are always more trusted on the economy than Republicans in general. And the party that's out of power is usually given a chance when the economy's going sour. So that's why 2 weeks ago I declared on this show that it was over. And that while I was confident all along that Obama would win, I was now sure of it. And McCain pulling out of Michigan is just one more sign about it. We'll see how that goes. But let's turn for just a few minutes to the bailout. So after the House of Representatives turned down the bailout last Monday, they took a couple of days off during the Jewish holiday, which I misidentified last week because I was talking off the top of my head. But after the holiday, Congress came back. The Senate voted on Wednesday, which I was glad to see. I had suggested that strategy before, that it could put pressure on the House if the Senate voted first. They ended up voting first. And then the House came along and voted on it on Friday, and it got enacted. Now, just want to review the notes here a little bit. Now, keep in mind, this is a Republican presidency. And it's the Republicans went to the administration, and Henry Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, went to Capitol Hill looking for votes, looking for passage of something it said was crucial. And the Democrats stepped up bigger than the Republicans stepped up. So you may remember that only a third of Republicans in the House voted for it a week ago, and 60% of Democrats voted for it. Had 60% of Republicans voted for it, it would have passed easily. This is in the House. So the Senate takes it up last Wednesday, and the vote was 74-25. Right? and a higher percentage of Democrats voted for it than Republicans, right? But that having been said, back to the House on Friday, people switched votes, and it passed fairly easily. It passed 263 to 171, right? That's a reversal of almost 60 votes in 5 days. But the majority of those votes came from Democrats. More Democrats switched over. So in the end, Democrats voted for it about 3-1. And the majority of Republicans still voted against it. Now, keep in mind, we're only 3 weeks from an election. So what happens is Republicans want to win that election. And so there are any number of them some of them are principled and say, oh, we can't have this bailout. But in fact, it's not clear it's going to cost the country that much. We're buying assets. We're going to resell them. I know we're being sold a bill of goods at one level. By the same token, we're saying that the economy's at stake, that the economy could fail if we don't get this right. So given that, you do have to wonder about people who will not vote for this. In any case, they're all going up home now. They're all going for re-election. There's over 100 Republicans can say I voted against it, and I guess that will work for them. We'll see. But the last piece I want to talk about here is this issue of who's to blame for this, because the Republicans and conservatives are out there arguing that it's Democrats that are to blame, Barney Frank and these other Democrats who support Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, that all of this started with the financial crisis in the home mortgage market, and that when laws were passed that allowed, required banks to try and make loans to low-income people with less of down payments, maybe no down payments, that was the start of all of this. And so they want to lay the blame at the feet of the Democratic Party because the Democrats are more heavily associated with this effort and with Freddie Mae and Fannie Mac. The Democrats, on the other hand, are making the case that no, it was deregulation of the financial markets. We used to have rules in place and people weren't allowed to leverage their assets as much as they are. So there have been a series of decisions dating back to the Reagan administration in the 80s that have loosened the rules on investment banks. And to give two examples, one is that the leveraging went from 1-6. That is, if you've got $1 billion in the bank, you can loan out $6 billion, from 6-1 to 32-1 or even 40-1. So what happened was investment banks were overextended. The other thing that happened essentially, and there was a good article in The Economist about this, unlike Sarah Palin, I don't claim to read The Economist, but occasionally I read an article out of it. And it dealt pretty well with this. But basically what it said is if you were to look at all the assets in the U.S. market that we're looking at here, there's $3 to $4 trillion that have, tangible, fungible assets underneath them. Houses, property, companies that have real assets. On top of that, there's about 10 times that, between $30 and $40 trillion in financial wagering almost. People who are betting that, people that are insuring these assets, insuring this, people who are selling short, people who are betting that the stock will go up or the stock will go down. And that's the house of cards that's in trouble. Okay. Now, that is not something that the middle class or lower middle class or the poor of this country are responsible about. This problem is not fundamentally traceable to the mortgage mess and the fact that some people got in mortgages they shouldn't have got, whether it was their own fault or somebody led them to believe their payments would be fine. It's simply not true that the poor of this country got us in this trouble. Wall Street got us in this trouble, and in fact, the National Urban League has called on Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson to refute these claims by conservatives that it's the poor that are to blame for all of this. In any case, that'll do it for another edition of the Andy Finn Show. I'll be back next Monday. No, I won't. Next Monday's a holiday. I think we're closed next Monday. It is Columbus Day, October 13th, so if the station's closed, I will not be here. I'll be back in 2 weeks, and by then we'll have all kinds of election news to report. Until then, you can read my blogs, or my writings, or my here to previous shows at andyfinn.us, that's andyfinn.us. Until then, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.